It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. For the first time in half a century, officials in Cuba have relaxed restrictions on U.S. travel, making it possible for more Cubans to legally travel to the United States. One of those is writer and photographer Orlando Luis Pardo Laza, an activist who is among the island's small group of independent bloggers who have used the internet to express themselves. Orlando Luis Pardo Laza is an editor for the first e-zine in Cuba. He's touring Pittsburgh after stops in Washington and New York City, and he appeared at Bar Marco last night here in town. He is a regular columnist for Samsonia Way, an online magazine sponsored by City of Asylum Pittsburgh that seeks to protect and advocate for writers. Orlando Luis Pardo Laza is with us in Studio A. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. My privilege to be here with you.
And if you have a comment or question for our guest, you can call us at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address is esspgh@wesa.fm. And you can reach us on Twitter at esspgh and follow the conversation at #EPLive. When Cuba first announced it was easing travel restrictions back in January, Orlando Luis, you were mentioned in an NPR story that said that you had standing invitations from various universities abroad, but had declared yourself on strike until Cuba grants full travel rights to all citizens. But you're here now, so does that mean that Cuba has granted full travel rights to all citizens?
Yes, I don't have the opinion that their full rights are guaranteed, but until last January, we had a humiliating, like a exit permission, that was the name in Spanish, permiso de salida. It was very humiliating because after you got your passport and the visa to travel to any country, you had to ask to the government and explain exactly where you were traveling in order that they give you or not the exit permission. So I was really tired of that. I was denied. Other colleagues and bloggers were denied that permission 20 times. So I said, I will not ask for that humiliating tramite anymore. Suddenly, after the so-called migratory reforms of Raúl Castro in January, that exit permission disappeared, as it disappeared also the invitation letter which Cuban citizens had to present to the Cuban government in order to travel outside the country. So I only had to take my passport, go to the U.S. intersection in Havana, and then get my plane to Miami. So I did so. But I don't think that the rights of migratory rights are guaranteed, because in the law, still in the migratory reform, it's very clear that for public reasons, for security, state security reasons, and other abstract reasons that they are not clearly defined in the law, I could be prevented to travel because they could deny the renewal of my passport. So we don't have exit permission now. That's why I'm here. But maybe when I go back to Cuba and try to travel again, they will not renew my passport.
Is it? And you've referred to this as blackmail, that this is something that the Cuban government holds over people's heads, that we'll let you travel, but we're going to basically put you on your knees before we allow you to do it. And there are going to be certain conditions attached.
Or I will be monitoring your activity, where you go, to whom you travel, how do you express yourself about the system? Are you going to speak with WESA, or are you going to be in the United Nations, as it was my case with a correspondent there? We will be monitoring you. So when you come back to Cuba and try to travel back, we will be punishing you as a father punishes his little children. But because really Cubans, we do not, there is no space. There is no civic space to behave as responsible citizens, because the state behaves as a paternalistic state, distrusting their own citizen and somehow punish them without any kind of legal condition. So I am not committing no crime. I have never been in a trial in Cuba, but anyway, I received the pressure and indeed the violation of the fundamental rights, let's say in this case, to travel. No? So I'm really almost certain that the Cuban government will not let me travel back once I enter the island.
So there's a real concern that you may not ever be able to come back to Pittsburgh or New York or Washington and other places that you visited, Miami. Yeah. And because we do, because we are accessible on the internet, they could conceivably, the government of Cuba could conceivably be listening to what we're discussing right now?
I work with absolute transparency. I have a Twitter account, OLPL, at Twitter, and I tweet every activity that I do. The streaming of my conferences in different universities, Brown, Princeton, NYU, the new school, Pennsylvania University. I have tweeted that I was going to be here, that I am working with Samsonia Way. So I work with absolute transparency because I have nothing to hide. I'm just a critic, an intellectual critic to the establishment, but I'm a Pacific person respecting the Cuban law, even the repressive Cuban law. So the Cuban state is not my enemy. I have been turned into an enemy by the Cuban state, by the belligerent and intolerant logic in which the Cuban state still behaves. It's a very anti-modern behavior for a state.
So something that you say on this radio show, as we're talking right now during this interview, could conceivably get you in some kind of trouble?
The monolithic, intolerant apparatus of monitoring citizens is so intolerant that even if we talk here about the beautiful spring that we are about to have in Pittsburgh, maybe they will consider that a provocation because we don't have spring in Cuba.
So they could interpret that as some sort of subversive statement.
Exactly. A subversive statement could be my presence here, my free behavior, my solidarity with person having troubles in Cuba right now, as I was being in trouble a couple of months ago. So anything could lead you into trouble, and therefore we are absolutely free in the middle of the barbed wire camp. We don't care about that because otherwise we will have to choose the historical alternative, silence or exile. And I am taking a bet against those extremes. I do not want to remain silent. I do not want to remain outside of my country. So we are striving for opening spaces in the new context of the what is called post-revolution, maybe, no? This post-revolutionary regime.
The Castro brother, the Raul Castro regime, which, and I'm going to get to talking to you a little bit about how, if at all, things have changed in Cuba. I want to ask you, though, and we mentioned this in the introduction to the program, what do you think of the flap here in the United States over recording artists Beyonce and Jay-Z going to Cuba? Some on Capitol Hill have called for an investigation to determine whether they've broken any laws. Does the United States seem to be mirroring what the Cuban government is doing to some extent, in your view?
First of all, I respect the democratic laws of the United States. I understand they are historical goals in terms that the Cuban government is not the equal of the U.S. government. We are talking of a democratic government in the United States, and we are talking of a dictatorship in Cuba. But I am in favor of the freedom to travel to all citizens, especially in the case of Cuba and North America. For us, it has been a real fresh air having the opportunity of exchanging with academics, U.S. academics in Cuba, students from colleges traveling to Cuba with a special permit for the government. And I think that the more American citizens that are traveling to Cuba, professionals, regular workers, it will be better because the Cuban people will get into contact with them and will know that the decades of propaganda, anti-imperialistic propaganda, are completely false. And North America is a natural ally of our country, that the people care a lot about each other, and the political differend could be solved very simply. And it could be solved as simply as if the Cuban government stop behaving as a closed society, as a private sect, and restores the fundamental rights of the Cuban people. We are not talking of communism or capitalism, but fundamental rights, freedom of association, freedom of speech, freedom of traveling, freedom of investment. And let's see then what the will of the people, of the Cuban people, will decide for the future. But as we don't have these fundamental rights, we don't even have a voice within Cuba.
So you're saying there needs to be a constitutional democracy.
It could be like a referendum at some moment. And some effort has been done on this. In Cuba exists the Christian Liberation Movement, which has collected over 20,000 signatures of the Cuban people in order to present them, to deliver them to the Cuban parliament. And so the Cuban parliament is forced by law to pay attention to that demand of legal transformation. But they are not doing so. They are not paying attention. They are repressing these activists. And therefore, it is as if the Cuban government does not want an understanding with the Cuban people. The U.S. embargo is a secondary issue in this. It's the Cuban government that does not want to get an understanding with its own people.
Our guest is Cuban activist, writer, and photographer Orlando Luis Pardo Lazo. He's touring the United States and has made a stop in Pittsburgh with us here on Essential Pittsburgh. And you were originally trained as a molecular biochemist. How did you get into writing?
I always loved writing and reading. My father was an English professor. Maybe my first readings were in English, no? Trying to understand that strange language that for me as a child was like a discovery, a mystery that belonged to me and not to my friends in elementary school. So there is something very emotive about English, no? And I always wrote, and in university I started participating in some literary contest. And so when I quitted my professional career as a molecular biologist, I just decided that I was going to make an effort, not to participate in a more public fashion in trying to present my work to publishing houses within Cuba. And then I was able to publish 4 books, short fiction books in Cuba, until I had some serious censorship troubles with the 5th one.
You ran into trouble when you were producing this 5th book of short stories. Talk about the piece that got you in trouble, that led to the government not wanting to let you publish this 5th book, and in fact, leading them to say that you would never publish again.
Yes. My book was called, is called, because it's published now abroad, Boring Home. In English, I mean. It says it's
Boring written, Home.
Boring Home. This book leads with a lot of topics. It's starting from realism, but they're going to absorb to maybe dystopic visions of Cuban society, where the political imaginary is used in a very permanent way, no, as a style. I mean, it's very politic, but it's not speaking directly to the status quo that we have now. But I think that the book had an opportunity to be published in Cuba. The problem was that at the same time, I was posting articles in my blog, Lunes de Post-Revolución, Post-Revolutionary Mondays is the name of my blog. And then at some point, I was dealing with some, trying to be provocative with some sacred aspect of the Cuban solemn icons, like could be the flag, it could be the national anthem. And I was trying to get to the history of these symbols, how they represent at some point violence, how they represent at some point the contrary of life. It represents somehow the will of death, the martyrology. And I was trying to escape from that as a literary, as part of my literary purposes. And then they started saying that I was violating the law, the Cuban law, because I was somehow desecrating the symbols.
Yeah, and this goes into the other aspect of what you do, which is photography, and this has flourished as part of your blog. You write these posts, and you also have photographs that accompany your writings. And there was one, what you're referring to here is a photo that you were questioned about that had some imagery of a flag, which is a Havana, from what I understand, from what I've read, is a city of flags. There are flags flying everywhere, and the symbolism of some of those is very, very sacred. So describe the image that got you into trouble that you
yes.
produced.
The Cuban Revolution has erased the bodies of the citizens. We don't have a body. Consequently, we don't have pleasure.
And when you refer to the Cuban Revolution, you're referring to Castro, you're referring to Fidel mainly.
The personalistic regime that is called the Cuban Revolution, the status quo, the establishment, whatever, no?
Yeah.
They somehow believe in the mass. They believe in mass democracy. At some point in history, Fidel said something in the Revolution Square, and when the citizens raised their hands in a massive way, that was a law. So that was called direct democracy. In practice, it meant there was no democracy at all. The will of Fidel was being perpetrated by the direct will of the people. And in my opinion, that has something to do in common with fascism. But I was telling that the revolution erased the body. And that specific pictures of the Cuban flag, it was not a picture of the city. It was a picture of the flag and a human body. And therefore, this association of naked body, absolute vulnerability, the skin of you cannot lie, your skin cannot lie about you, about your age, about the scars that you have. In making a short circuit with the Cuban flag was interpreted as a blasphemy, something like blasphemy, no? As if we were living in a fundamental regime or something like that. And therefore, I was taken by the political police. I was questioned, and ultimately, they imposed me a warning police act in which I am in risk to be taken to jail because that activity constitutes a crime.
You were at grave risk of committing a crime, in the words of a government, for publishing a photo on your blog of a nude which appeared to be in the same frame as the remnants of a flag.
And besides, not only the picture, but I also wrote a column about that, a column that was very claustrophobic. I was talking of a hurricane erasing Cuban reality. I was talking of the voice of Fidel Castro as the last remaining of memory in Cuba. I was talking of the suicide poets that have been committed suicide in Cuba in the last 10 years. And I was talking of pleasure, the pleasure that the body can give out, and also the pleasure of erasing yourself as the revolution has been erasing bodies. All that was mixed in a very, in my opinion, exciting column. And then
it was the art of expression, which in the United States you would freely be able to do, but in Cuba,
it would constitute like a direct aggression to the heart of the system. It's almost unbelievable. It's ridiculous, in my opinion.
What is the government afraid of in Cuba? What has it been afraid of these last five decades when it comes to someone like you?
Well, the government has absolute power, absolute force.
But what do they think you're going to do with something as seemingly innocuous as obviously there's an intentional imagery and a message that you're trying to convey, but at the same time, what is it that they are perceiving as a threat?
They don't want life after the revolution. Let's say when the Pope, the former Pope Benedict XVI, went to Havana in March 2012, 3 days before the Holy Mass in the Revolution Square, I was taken into prison. I was walking in the street with my girlfriend, and she's not an activist, we were both taken into prison preventively in a prophylactic way during the whole visit of the Pope. There were no charges against us, nothing was explained. We could not make a phone call to our families. My mother is 77 years.
Couldn't call a lawyer.
Please. What are you talking about?
So you go to Cuba, or the Pope goes to Cuba, and you're thrown in jail.
Yes.
As a preventative, what were they thinking you were going to do?
Take pictures of the Pope. Maybe my picture would entrail some danger to the government. Besides, I think that this is not so funny. They were making like experimental, because it was not only me. There were hundreds of activists, social activists, pacific social activists arrested. And in my opinion, they were preparing what I call Day F. It means funeral of Fidel. When that happens, we will not be there. We will be taken out of the street. I don't know if we will be released or it will be definite for us. So in my opinion, any kind of chaotic situation, any kind of social disturbances in Cuba, any kind of trouble with Venezuela's situation right now in the elections,
with the whole Hugo Chavez regime.
We will not be there. We, actors of the civic society in Cuba, I am sure that they have the personnel and the media not to allow us to protagonize any kind of pacific transition in Cuba. So there is something tragic there. We are working with a limit because, as I told you in the beginning of this answer, they do not want future after the revolution. They want après moi le déluge, after us, the flood.
So you and other independent bloggers in Cuba have it's from what it sounds like, have not escaped the scorn of Raul Castro's government. Fidel Castro's brother, who succeeded his brother when he fell into ill health, and the government has a lot of supporters. So has anything changed in Cuba since Raul Castro? We keep hearing here in the United States that things are being relaxed a little more, people are being given more freedom. But what does that mean for you, a writer like yourself?
Raul has started to make from 2008 until now what they have been calling the Raulistic reforms. Other dissidents are calling them the fraud change or the fraudulent change, because everything is changing so that nothing changes. Let's say, so simple things as the right to have a mobile phone was prohibited. So for mobiles in Cuba, maybe you're not believing me. I'm not expecting you to believe me.
No, I've read this.
We had to go to a foreign person, maybe an American traveler to Cuba. He will hire the line, and I will keep paying the line. Now, Raul allows us to have a mobile phone. Thank you, Raul Castro.
So you're saying that by giving you these little things, it's just sort of holding everybody in check and exactly. preventing a counter-revolution.
Yes. No, let's say now we have the right to go to tourist hotels. We were living in an apartheid system, and nobody cared about that. Now Raul granted us what should have never should have been taken from us, the right to go to a hotel in Cuba. It's incredibly. The same with internet. Now there is a limited access to internet, but still a Cuban citizen cannot get a domestic internet account in Cuba. You have to go to institutional mechanism. These things are so elementary that I'm sure that our audience here would not understand exactly what we are talking about. We are talking of absolute, the individual is completely naked. That's why I was making some naked with Cuban flags, completely naked in the face of a state that controls all jobs, all institutions, all even religious presence in Cuba, because we don't have 1 minute of a Catholic priest speaking in the media in Cuba or in the press. So it's very sad at some point, but I don't want to picture a gray image. I love my country, I love my city, and I would like more Americans to travel and to know about this time where we are somehow in risk to go to a more totalitarian dictatorship, maybe with investment from foreign importances, but without any rights for the Cuban people, or we have an opportunity to start opening guaranteeing the fundamental rights for the Cuban people and the Cuban exiles, which are part of the nations, and the Cuban government is saying, no, we don't recognize your rights. You are no longer Cubans, and this is very unfair with the Cuban exiles.
Our guest is Cuban activist, writer, and photographer Orlando Luis Pardo Lazo. He's touring the United States, and he's here in Pittsburgh as part of that tour. We have just a couple of minutes left. What are your realistic hopes for the future with regard to freedom for writers in Cuba?
I am skeptical as long as Raul Castro and Fidel Castro remain alive. It's sad to say so, but what is called the biological solution seems to be our only perspective. The Cuban civic society, I don't know if we will have enough force to demand for these fundamental rights to be guaranteed.
You've been here in Pittsburgh, in addition to New York and Washington. How has being able to travel freely fueled your creativity?
A lot. I haven't been able to take a picture because my eyes are so full of images and so full of color that I'm not putting the camera in front of my eye. And the same with the writing. I am taking so much information, so learning so much, establishing contact with American, different nationalities, Cubans living in the United States, that I haven't been able to write almost a few paragraphs. But I know all this material will be growing, and when I went back in Cuba, it will be better.
Do you like Pittsburgh?
Very much. Thank you.
Well, I thank you for being here. Our guest has been Cuban activist, writer, and photographer Orlando Luis Pardo Lazo. And again, you can read his works in Samsonia Way. He's a regular contributor as part of the City of Asylum. And thank you again for visiting us. And we look forward to having you back in Pittsburgh again sometime soon, I hope.
Thank you very much. A great opportunity for me.
Coming up, travel correspondent Elaine LaBaume looks at Pennsylvania's Brandywine region when Essential Pittsburgh continues on 90.5 WESA.